Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is USDA Undersecretary Jenny Lester Moffitt, who joins us to discuss the department's marketing and regulatory programs portfolio. But first, here's this week's headlines. Negotiators reached an agreement to raise the nation's debt ceiling just in time for Capitol Hill to act on the issue. The deal brought the House back into session for some unscheduled votes during the week of Memorial Day. The bill easily passed through the House Wednesday night following the expiration of a 72-hour waiting period mandated by the chamber's rules. That sent the bill to the Senate for consideration in that chamber. President Joe Biden has until Monday to sign the bill under a Treasury Department timeline. The agreement includes a change to work requirements for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, and Ag Committee leaders say that could keep the issue off the agenda in the upcoming Farm Bill. The bill raises the maximum age for SNAP work requirements from the current 49 to 54, but adds exemptions for veterans, the homeless, and young people under 24 leaving the foster care system. Senate Ag Chair Debbie Stabenow said work requirements are now one less issue to deal with in the Farm Bill, but House Ag Chair Glenn G.T. Thompson didn't go that far, suggesting other eligibility changes could be considered. And finally, USDA lowered its forecast for 2023 agricultural exports this week. A new quarterly report released Wednesday trimmed the fiscal 2023 expected total $3.5 billion to $181 billion. Once factoring for imports, USDA says it is expecting a fiscal year trade deficit of $17 billion on weaker shipments of commodities like corn, wheat, and beef. Here at home, USDA is pursuing a diversification of income streams for producers, including a larger focus on local and regional marketing. That's under the purview of Marketing and Regulatory Programs Undersecretary Jenny Lester Moffitt, who tells us the effort is gaining momentum.
The purpose for the Regional Food Business Centers is that we at USDA and other of our sister agencies across the federal family and state governments as well have a myriad of programs that are designed to support producers as they're looking at advancing and finding more new and better markets, whether that's value add production or diversified supply chains, whatever that might be. And so these 12 regional food business centers that we announced are really going to be able to do that. They're going to be the navigators with farmers and ranchers and food producers. They're now getting stood up. They have been spending as they developed their applications last year. They've developed their partnerships already because the key is that there are multiple different partners that have different expertise that make up these business centers. And so they're finalizing what their partnerships look like and designing their programs so that they can start to get running, hopefully later this summer and early in the fall, to be able to support producers in their projects that they have.
One of the things I always wonder when we talk about local and regional food production and distribution is the fact of the matter that I'm originally from South Dakota, and I know some people that like to eat vegetables in the month of January. I mean, how do we emphasize local production, local distribution, but still keeping that global, that national interconnected supply chain a factor and moving some of these products around to parts of the country where they just can't be grown locally?
Absolutely. That is such a key thing. And it was really incredible last week to be in Nebraska with the Heartland Regional Food Business Center, talking about some of these same dynamics that they have, right? That they have great product in certain times of the year. They have other product that is available during the winter. But yes, that global supply chain and how it ties, how local and regional, national and global supply chains tie together. But the key is that producers and food makers have opportunities to access different markets, local markets, regional markets, national markets, cultural markets as well, right? Because some folks are producing something that is maybe a religious type of a product or a certain cultural or other type of product. And so being able to access the right markets for their need, I think, is really critical. So international is a key part of that. Making sure that we've got a supply chain that is really diversified is the goal.
I want to shift to organic production and transition supports, some announcements from the department recently on that front. Why did USDA feel that additional support for producers looking to move into organic, why did the USDA feel that was necessary?
Yeah, the Organic Transition Initiative is part of the administration and USDA's work on building more new and better markets. There's many ways in which we're doing that. They are looking at how we take byproducts and turn them into new value for farmers and ranchers, how we're looking, of course, at climate smart commodities in the same way. Value add product and organic is another key component of that, really about advancing more opportunities for farmers and ranchers to bring more of that food dollar back to their family farms so that they can see a future in their agricultural operation, they can see a future for their kids and other and the next generation, and that also they can bring more jobs back to rural America, and so we can have a thriving agricultural economy across the nation. So the Organic Transition Initiative is part of that. It has many different facets to it because we know, just like in any agricultural production system, it's not just about technical assistance, it's not just about advancing market supply channels, it's not just about conservation, it's all of those things together.
We'll be right back with more from USDA Undersecretary Jenny Lester Moffitt right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahe build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back. Detections of highly pathogenic avian influenza have plummeted this year, and USDA Undersecretary for Marketing and Regulatory Programs Jenny Lester Moffitt says that can be attributed to many different factors that led to the success.
Yeah, the great news is that since March 1st till I think May 25th, we've had 7 detections of commercial high path AI in the past year or in that past time frame. That same time frame a year ago, as you identify, there were 125 detections. So that is great. A lot of it is due to and thanks to the work that producers have been doing, implementing and ensuring their biosecurity plans. That is a really important part of it. We know the virus is still prevalent in the wild bird population. And so the partnerships with state animal health officials, as well as producers, industry, academia, to make sure that we continue to do robust surveillance, that the industry continues to implement the biosecurity plans, is a really important part of that.
Last week, you were on hand for the opening of the National BioAgri Defense Facility in Manhattan, Kansas. I wonder, what do you think the role of that facility is in the future of a potential HPA outbreaks, God forbid, something like African swine fever or foot and mouth disease should hit the American livestock markets? What do you think the role of that facility will be in future potential outbreaks?
So many different things. So first off, of course, the research that's going to be happening there on all different consequential animal diseases that we are looking at, we are facing, making sure that we are always looking forward to the future of what can be out there and monitoring that. Of course, as well, I think a really important part and what we've been doing, what APHIS has been doing at Plum Island, and I see such a huge growth potential at NBAF, is the training that we do for our state partners, for industry partners. So again, they are knowing what to detect for signs and symptoms of the disease, and also how what to do when they do see signs and symptoms, how to make sure we get samples, appropriate samples, and get them quickly processed at the lab so we know what we're facing.
Want to wrap up talking about just the broader MRP portfolio that that you have under your belt. Coming up on, I believe, 2 years, it'll be August, 2 years you've been at the department. What's something that you come across on a daily basis that, frankly, maybe when you took the job or agreed to be vetted for it, you didn't know you were going to be dealing with on a regular basis?
You know, what I really love about the marketing and regulatory program portfolio between the Animal Plant Health Inspection Services and Agricultural Marketing Services is that just the broad depth that we, and the broad portfolio that we have within those. What I really appreciate and love about that, especially as someone who comes from running my family's operation, is how deeply impactful the work that APHIS and AMS does every day to family farms, and many times, and when we're most successful, farmers don't even know the work that we're doing because we've been successful at not even getting those different issues to farmers and ranchers.
Well, and now folks might recognize things like USDA's farmers market starting up now as well.
Yeah, absolutely. The USDA farmers market is just such an incredible resource right there on the National Mall to be able to showcase the local bounty that has grown here in the region. So we're excited that the USDA Farmers Market is now open every Fridays. It's in a new location this year, so it will be on the other side of the building, closer to the Washington Monument, and it will go all through the summer through the end of September. So for folks who are in the Capital Region, definitely give it a look.
We appreciate the opportunity to sit down and chat. Undersecretary Lester Moffitt, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll be right back to hear from this week's panel, but first, our Hannah Pagel walks us through a title of the Farm Bill many producers use every year in this week's Farm Bill Focus.
Title 11 of the Farm Bill includes the legislation's crop insurance language. The federal crop insurance program helps farmers to protect against disaster, rainfall, and revenue losses. It's a unique public-private partnership. Farmers pay a portion of their premiums to protect their investments, and the public benefits with a secure food supply. According to USDA figures, federal crop insurance covered 493 million acres in the 2022 crop year, up 70% from 2016. Congress has expanded crop insurance over the last three farm bills. Some of the changes added more types of risk. The bills also added more covered commodities such as hemp in the 2018 farm bill, and more specialty crops. In 2014, Whole Farm Revenue Protection Program grew out of a pair of former pilot projects to cover more diversified fruit, vegetable, and livestock operations. The title also includes several programs for livestock producers, including livestock gross margin, livestock risk protection, and dairy revenue protection plans. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Who's the number one protein source in chicken feed? You are. Who just increased sales to Egypt by 700%? You did. Who made a huge deal with Goodyear? You again. Take a victory lap. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, you're making sales. You're making breakthroughs that all come back to your bottom line. That's you. That's who. As your soy checkoff. Moving soy forward. Moving you forward.
It's not as simple as just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. We're going to continue our conversation on highly pathogenic avian influenza and its impacts on the poultry industry with a couple of folks that have been dealing with it for a little bit of time now. Joel Brandenberger with the National Turkey Federation and Ashley Peterson with the National Chicken Council. Appreciate both of you taking the time to join us. And Joel, I want to go to you first because we look at the USDA reported detections right now. The picture is looking quite a bit better as we sit here right now than it did a year ago. At what point do you allow yourself to breathe a sigh of relief, or do you ever?
Never. Vigilance is really important through this. I think, you know, it's been devastating. There have been slightly more than 10 million commercial turkeys lost to the disease, but there have been some things that are encouraging. One, USDA reports that cases of farm-to-farm transmission are significantly lower than they were in 2015. The last time we had a major outbreak, that speaks to really enhanced biosecurity programs. Our biggest problems right now are the viral loads in the wild bird population and the fact that this strain seems to be less susceptible to heat, which meant it didn't go away in the summer last year like previous outbreaks have. But we're encouraged by where we are right now, but no one's ready to declare victory.
Well, and as part of that, part of the strategy that folks have been looking at is the potential for vaccination to enter the fold and enter the conversation in the event of future outbreaks, and frankly, should a vaccine be developed. But the Turkey Federation has taken the stance that, you know, maybe vaccination is something that could or should be pursued in the event of a future outbreak, which is not a stance that is shared by the rest of the industry. Can you expand on why the Turkey Federation feels the way it does?
Actually, I think that's one thing that's gotten mischaracterized, and I think Ash should agree with me. I think we're actually all, the turkey industry, the broiler industry, the commercial egg layers are all in roughly the same position. NTF's position is this. Yes, a vaccine should be developed. Research should be done. We should try to find a vaccine that would work well on this strain. That should happen, you know, regardless of any other consideration. However, where I think we're all in agreement is a vaccine probably should not be deployed until we know it won't devastate trade. We've got a lot of trade agreements that are based on, frankly, some old science when there was less of an ability to detect the difference between infected birds and vaccinated birds. Those trade agreements have to be updated. You know, we can't vaccinate if it's going to collapse the export market for all poultry and egg products. And I think we're all in agreement on that. I think that's everyone's concern. Our position is a vaccine should be developed. So if we can change trade agreements, the option is there. And we believe the government should reach out to our trade partners to see if we can change the trade agreements. And I think USDA is having some preliminary conversations in that regard. And it's a process, but no one on the turkey side is advocating unilateral vaccination tomorrow. That's not our position.
Okay. So, Ashley, you know, we hear the nuances of Joel's position there. And now I wonder from the Chicken Council side of things, looking at this as USDA is, of course, going through the trial process with its vaccines and working towards some kind of results there later this year. I wonder, what is kind of the nuances of NCC's position? I have to imagine there's some similarities with NTF in the trade aspect of it. But where does NCC differ, perhaps, with NTF on this?
Right. And I think that's a great question. And I would agree with Joel. I think we are very much aligned with NTF and developing a vaccine is absolutely fine to have that as a backup. But I think the thing that needs to happen first is agreement with all of our trading partners that using a vaccine, regardless of what sector decides to use a vaccine, will not impact trade. So to put some numbers around it, you know, we export about 17% of our production, which equates to almost 7.5 billion pounds of chicken. And that was 2022 numbers. And so we need to make sure that we can reach an agreement with all of our trading partners that not only can we continue to export poultry meat, our broiler meat, but that we can also continue to export genetics, which is another significant portion of the U.S. broiler industry.
We'll be right back with more from our panel right after this.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at AgriPulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back. Ashley Peterson with the National Chicken Council says the recent lengthy battle with highly pathogenic avian influenza is likely to have some lingering effects in the poultry industry.
So I definitely think that, you know, we're seeing it perhaps endemic in wild bird populations, and that, you know, one of the reasons that perhaps we've seen a decrease in spread right now is that there is a decrease in viral load within wild bird populations. And so that could be one of the reasons we're seeing such increase. And knock on wood, you know, we want that to continue. And biosecurity has to remain a top priority for the industry, so what that viral load looks like. But I think, you know, things are definitely a lot different today than they were back in the 2014-15 outbreak, which we alluded to earlier.
Ashley, in your mind, what is the lesson learned from the current 22-23 outbreak?
Well, I think Joel used the word vigilant, and I think that I would echo that. We need to make sure that we are always thinking about biosecurity and putting that top of mind, regardless of what the viral load is out there across the U.S. We learned a lot about lines of separation, ventilation, things like that from the 2014-15 outbreak. And I think that, you know, once we had the first detection in Indiana back in February of 2022, we thought, oh my goodness, we know we've been here before. We know what this looks like, unfortunately. So we need to buckle down and make sure that we can keep as much virus out of our houses as possible.
Well, and Joel, I want to wrap up our conversation with you because obviously it was such a major story last year across many of the products in the poultry space, be it meat, eggs, et cetera, price inflation that took place as a result of general inflation, but also the HPAI outbreak specifically was front of mind for many consumers. As prices start to come down, we're seeing reports that prices are getting lower and lower. What does the poultry industry need to do to regain the market share it once had prior to some of these price increases?
Well, you know, and I can only speak for the turkey industry on this. You know, in reality, despite dire predictions, there was literally no impact on Thanksgiving at all. You know, the frozen birds were plentiful. Stores were still doing discounts to bring shoppers in like they always did. It virtually unchanged from previous years. Some spot shortages in some regions of some products, you know, some breast meat shortages in some places briefly. But I think it's literally a matter of customers being confident that the products they enjoy are going to be there. They're going to be readily available. They're going to be at a competitive price. And we're seeing that right now. And I think a lot of it will take care of itself.
Very good. So a number of things to keep an eye on in the poultry space, but ever vigilant against HPAI and its potential spread is this U.S. poultry industry something to keep an eye on as we move forward here. Joel and Ashley, thanks for joining us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers, but first, our Hannah Pegel introduces us to a fresh face in farm policy in this week's Meet the Lawmaker.
Illinois Democrat Eric Sorensen represents the state's 17th district. Before coming to Congress, Sorensen worked as a TV meteorologist for more than two decades. As one of the newest members of the House Ag Committee, as well as the Science, Space, and Technology Committee, Sorensen is using his background in meteorology to help guide his priorities in the upcoming Farm Bill.
Aside from the seed that you're putting in the ground, the weather is it is the most important thing, right? So being on ag and then also being on science, being the ranking member on space, so that I can make sure that the appropriation is there for weather modeling technology, to make sure that satellite technology, it's not so much that I want to make sure that our farmers can look down at an acre of land. We're going to be able to look down to a couple of square feet of land.
Sorensen also discusses how investments in rural communities will be a top priority for him in the Farm Bill. Head to AgriPulse.com to watch his full interview. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pegel.
Register now for the 2023 AgriPulse Food and Ag Issue Summit in California. The event will offer participants a full day of presentations and panel discussions. You can hear from members of the California Legislature, food and agriculture leaders, along with industry experts and academics. The summit takes place on June 5th at the Sheraton Grand Sacramento and through our virtual experience. View the latest information and register today under the events tab at agripulse.com.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. I'll be in Sacramento Monday for the AgriPulse Food and Ag Issues Summit. Both chambers of Capitol Hill will be back in town here in Washington. The House Ag Committee has two hearings on the schedule, including a Tuesday hearing on digital assets and a Wednesday get-together on the nutrition title. You can stay up to date with the latest as we track the news on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.